everyone, welcome to Reach Higher Riverside, where we share all Reach Higher stories happening in the greatest county in the nation. My name is Priscilla Grijalva, and I work at the best high school in the world. Everyone, this month we have an interview with three amazing school counseling leaders who are going to talk about school reentry and what it was like to reopen schools during a pandemic. We have an interview with Sandy Logan, who is a clinical assistant professor at Florida International University, and Jan Desmaris Morris, who is a school counselor at Goshen Middle School in Goshen, Indiana, and Darwin Vega, who is a school counselor at Capistrano Valley High School in California. You're going to love their interview, but before we go into that, I wanted to congratulate the six school districts across the nation who were winners of the inaugural Power of Hope Award from Reach Higher and the National Post-Secondary Strategy Institute. These school districts have school counselors in roles that are changing the lives of so many students. Congratulations to Westminster Public Schools, Alvord Unified School District, San Jacinto Unified School District, Moreno Valley Unified School District, New York City Department of Education, and Grand Prairie Independent School District. Thank you, Reach Higher, Common App, the National Post-Secondary Strategy Institute, and Michelle Obama for honoring school counselors across the nation. We will also post that article on our YouTube channel. Here we go. Enjoy this interview. Hi, everyone. I'm with three amazing educators. I'll go ahead and let them introduce themselves. We'll start with Sandy.
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sandy Logan McKibben, and I'm so excited to be here today and connect with all the school counselors that are listening to this. I'm a former elementary and middle school counselor with extremely high caseloads. I am now, and that was in California, I now am working as a school counselor educator in Florida. So glad to be here.
Hello, I'm Jan Damaris Morris, and I am a middle school counselor in Goshen, Indiana. I originally lived in Maine, grew up in Maine, and went to the University of Maine and did my programming for school counseling in Massachusetts. And I have been a school counselor for over 30 years now, and I love middle school.
Hello, everybody. My name is Darwin Vega. Very excited to be here. My background experiences. I've worked in higher education, alternative education, and currently I'm working at a comprehensive high school in Mission Viejo, California. We are a RAMP designated school as of 2019, and it's something we're very proud of. Last year, I was selected as the Orange County High School Counselor of the Year, and I currently also started working at Chapman University in their counseling program, teaching part-time there. And I always say that my most important role is being a husband and father of two little girls, ages 2 and 5.
Wow, that's awesome. So we have amazing guests today to talk about school reentry and what it was like for them as they opened up in their schools and the obviously advice that they've received from their students and stuff like that. So we're going to talk about a few questions. So if you could currently talk about, are you working hybrid or a mix of distance in person? And hybrid, maybe you could share what it's like in your state and your schools.
Sure. This is Sandy. I'll go ahead and get started and say in the state of Florida, things are pretty wide open. Schools resumed with the opportunity to be face-to-face all the way back to August of last year. So some took a little bit longer, but between August and October, all schools were back in terms of operations. Now, that doesn't mean all of our students are back yet, but they do have the option of being on campus full-time, or they can continue with online learning and that virtual option. So there's a little bit of a mix that goes on in Florida, and it is very school district specific.
I would say the same as Indiana goes, that it varies by school district. We have been in person since August as well, but we've had a variety of different options available, and then our transitions have been multiple during the school year. So we have an online academy that families could choose, K-12, and then we started out hybrid, but it was 2 days in person, 3 days virtual. Then we moved to 4 days in person and 1 day virtual. Then we had half of our, from grades 7 to 12, went back to virtual, all virtual right before Thanksgiving, and came back at the end of January. And now, as of March 15th, we are in school 5 days a week. We still have the online academy available, though, and students are there.
Oh, wow. And how about you, Darwin?
You know, very similar. And I think in California, there's been a mix, but my school district was one of the ones that's been open since the beginning of the school year in a hybrid setting. So students have the option to attend 100% online or to attend 2 days a week in person. And there's two cohorts. So we have around 25 to 30% of the students on campus Tuesday through Friday, and Monday they're all learning online. So it has been hybrid since the beginning of the school year.
Now I know like a lot of school districts in California are going to open March 22nd. So you were one of the lucky ones that opened earlier. Maybe you guys could describe what it was like in one word to reopen schools physically. What would you say to describe it in one word and why?
One word is a little challenging. You know, the first word that comes to my mind when I think about school reentry and being aware of it is flexible. Everyone needs to return to the campus in, you know, with their best flexible pants on, if they will, whether that's your role as a student, your role as a parent, a teacher, administrator, a counselor, being flexible with what may come in the future, I think is probably one of the most important things.
Yeah, that's true.
I have two different one word answers. The first one I thought of, I had to look it up because I thought, what would be a word to describe this? But I just said fitful because of all the starts and stops that we've had and two steps forward, one step backward kind of thing. And then the second word that I was thinking of as Sandy was talking was miraculous, because what our teachers have done is nothing short of miraculous. The different last minute calls they were given on, we're doing this, and in 2 days you have to be prepared for that. And what our staff did was nothing short of miraculous. I'm so proud of everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
And it is hard to, you know, think of one word. And for me, I think it was hopeful. Mm-hmm. It's so nice to know that our state leaders, you know, have taken the necessary steps to reopen safely. You know, our school communities have been impacted severely with distance learning. And I do think that students thrive more in person. And I don't think that's a secret. So, you know, to know that we're heading in a direction that's positive for everybody and that we're able to do it safely, I think it just provides hope for everybody, for students, staff, and our communities.
This is a two-part question. Feel free to elaborate. What are some things school counselors and educators should be aware of as we open up schools in California? Can you share lessons learned in the trenches of school reentry?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things to be aware of is that you're going to be working with human beings who are all in a variety of places. There are going to be those students and the staff members who are so hopeful and excited to return to some sense of normalcy, if we want to call it that. I think there's people who have done very well with virtual learning. And then there's also the other extreme end. There's those that have not really been a part of the virtual learning process or who have struggled. So I think, you know, being aware that you are entering into an environment with kind of a very diverse, we all have pretty diverse schools anyways, but having that experience be very different for everyone over the last 12 months or so, there will be feelings of disconnection and isolation, feeling overwhelmed, feeling like you have no answers, but you want all of the answers, and recognizing that that doesn't really exist, I think is important. So, you know, when I think about lessons learned, I think one of the most important things to kind of keep in mind is we as school counselors are some of the most resourceful people I know, and we need to utilize one another. So, you know, especially elementary school counselors who may find themselves flying as the solo counselor at the school, really reach out to your colleagues and utilize, like, work smarter, not harder. Be thinking about the lessons that were learned for those that have come before you. Again, you know, Florida was one of the first states to open up. So definitely not going to say everything's gone swimmingly well, but there are lessons that others, you know, such as California can learn. And I think, you know, I may get into this a little bit later, but I'll mention it now too. One of the things I think is most important is assess, not in terms of standardized testing or anything of that nature, but assess where people are at. I keep thinking of these three A words: assess, ask, and then academics. Assess what is going on for your students and your staff members. Ask them on a regular basis. And this isn't like a one and done kind of needs assessment type of thing. And then academics should not be the primary focus upon reentry into school. So those are three things that kind of really stand out to me in terms of lessons learned and things to really focus on.
Yeah, those are great lessons. How about you, Jan and Darwin?
I have to second what Sandy says about everybody being at different places, and I can talk later about some of the things we did at the start of the school year for our staff, just to find out, to assess where they were at. And they were, and they are overwhelmed, as Sandy said, because they come back from being in isolation, and then all of a sudden they're in all of the madding crowd, right? And it's overwhelming. Some of the kids are really excited to be back, but others have really struggled, and I can talk about that later. Academics are certainly not, should not be the first thing, because you have to spend some time in community and being able to assess people, but you have to spend time in community and helping people get acclimated to being together again. That's just something I would say is paramount.
Yeah. And yeah, Darwin?
And I'm going to have to agree, you know, academics shouldn't be our primary focus, you know, and the reality is that this pandemic has impacted our families' living situations differently, you know, and it's so important that we have those tangible resources for students, looking into basic necessities, creating needs assessments, and really seeing, you know, what does our community need? A lot of parents come to the school for everything when they need help, you know, and that's such a great honor, right? To think that families come to the school to get help, even with basic necessities, and making sure that we have those things. At my school, we were able to organize food drives, working with our sheriff's department, having those resources to family shelters ready to go, and kind of starting there with especially our families that, again, that have been severely impacted by the pandemic. And then now more than ever, you utilizing the MTSS to provide all those services, academic, social, emotional, and college and career for students. But again, I feel like that's almost secondary. If families don't have those basic necessities, you know, how are we going to focus on the other domains of counseling and education? So I think for me, that's been my greatest takeaway is, you know, kind of focusing on basic necessities. And at least in my school community, that's been a big thing.
Yeah, because we're the lifeline, it seems, helping all our families, and being a community is so important because we all need the support. So many kids are worried about going back to school campuses while others are happy. Everyone is in a different place. How should school counselors support students dealing with the trauma of this past year and move forward?
That's an excellent question. I think, again, kind of continuing with this idea that academics are not the primary thing to focus on upon school return. I think once you have gone through the process as a school counselor of thinking about how you're assessing your community, what are the needs of the community, then you start to think about things in a triage type of stance. So what are the initial needs that need to be taken care of? Like Darwin mentioned, sometimes it's the basic needs. So if that is food, if that is shelter, forms of housing or other financial assistance, that might be where your students and your families are at. So really thinking about how you need to triage the services and think about collaboration too. So, you know, this isn't the one person show, if you will. There's never been a more important time to be able to collaborate and be resourceful. So if you come to find out through your needs assessment that you still have 25% of your students and families who are struggling with stable internet, that's telling you right there where that's an excellent place for you to start. So, and then again, is that you reaching out to potential community partners? I know in Florida, pretty close to me, there was a community where it was really kind of a pocket that did not have stable internet service. And so the surrounding cities really pulled together with a particular internet provider, and they had, they kind of put up community poles, if you will, and they're at busy intersections that support that area. And so that was how the community kind of came in and really provided that resource that was necessary. So I think that school counselors can be supporting it by recognizing that they need to capitalize on their skills of community and collaboration. And again, not flying solo and doing this work alone. And then they can decide where their other skills are best addressed. If that is pulling together certain groups, if the, you know, the needs assessments show that, then you can decide what those direct services are. So I think really looking at both pieces, school counselors can support students through both the direct services and indirect services that they provide. Mm-hmm.
I love that internet idea that they did in Florida. That's such a great idea.
I found out just like probably mid-year that there's a pocket of our community where there is no internet access. Like there, it ends, one internet provider ends and another one begins, but there's this pocket in between that our students don't even have access to it. So we were seeking them out to provide MiFis for them and different things like that. I think a way that school counselors can support, I mean, you have to, how do you support students in a trauma? You're going to have to name it, at least name that it's possible that someone is experiencing that, because students may not know, our staff may not even recognize what's going on with them. It is really trauma. So giving them an opportunity to name it, to speak to it, to understand that not everyone they're working with, not everyone they're sitting next to in a classroom is at the same place they are. And just giving opportunity to process that. I think we have to do that. I wish that we had done a better job of that at my school. Our school counselors kept clanging that bell that this is important and this is what we need to do. And we were able to do a few things, but I don't think we went far enough with starting with the social emotional needs of our families and our kids and our staff. We could have gone further with it.
Jan, you were on another podcast. I heard it was a great episode. Can you tell everyone what podcast that was in case they want to listen to it, about some of the things you encountered and things you did with your school to help students and staff?
It's What Next with Mary Harris, and it's called COVID's Lasting Toll on Kids. Yeah, I was pretty proud of it. I think it came out pretty well.
Yeah, it was a great middle school perspective. Yeah. How about you, Darwin?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Jan and Sandra said everything and kind of outlined it. But again, I think a very effective and practical approach for school counselors is going to be to kind of hone in and focus on using the MTSS to provide, you know, tier one interventions for the entire school, SEL lessons, going into classrooms if you can, making sure that students know how to access the school counselor and the teachers know how to refer students. And then, like Sandra said, utilizing a needs assessment or needs assessments to kind of gauge where students are at. Then you can do tier two interventions. I know in our school in the past, we've had school therapy animals that have been helpful and kind of really just thinking outside of the box. You know, we're not our own island. And school counselors, you know, we shouldn't be in our office just waiting for students to come in and putting out fires. We've got to be out there during tutorial, during lunch, providing, yoga opportunities, just anything we can do with our school community, because there's so many skill sets out there that are related to the social and emotional domain, and we can work together to kind of provide that support for students. And also knowing where limitations are, referring out and working closely with community-based counseling resources and making sure, again, that we have those tangible resources that students can be connected to.
Yeah, then also being careful with the needs assessment because of the Hatch Amendment. So if you guys don't know what that is, you should look it up for all our listeners. So just being careful with that. I know Wendy Rock and who else was it? Dr. Carolyn Stone and Brian Coleman did a great webinar on that with ASCA, and it was recorded. So if you'd like to check it out, our listeners can look that up on the ASCA website. And I wanted to ask you guys, are students following protocols with mask wearing and social distancing, or has this been an issue at your school sites?
To be honest, I think something that we often don't, or we overlook rather, is that kids are very resilient, both children and adolescents. And for many of them, school is such an important part of their development and their world and just what they know, that students have been really good about following the protocols, because I think that, again, they're resilient, but they're also able to absorb what's around them and they recognize what's at risk. is really greater than just themselves. Even teenagers, developmentally, they are focused on others than themselves, and they want to be in this environment. And so if that means wearing the masks and following the protocols and things of that nature, that they recognize the benefits of social distancing is contributing to them being at school. So we have not found that it is a great concern. Obviously it's a concern, but I think it's gone more swimmingly well than I think people gave credit to students for.
Well, that's good to hear. How about you guys?
I have been very impressed with our students and their sticking to protocol with masks. And the social distancing at the middle school level is a little trickier because they just want to clump and be together. But with gentle reminders, they would disperse. But it's still hard. That social distancing piece is hard. And I think they learned the hard way at the beginning with our 7th and 8th graders. Our 6th graders were more isolated. We had them in a different area. But the 7th and 8th graders learned the hard way when we had to go back to virtual right before Thanksgiving. So when they came back at the end of January, they were much more willing to follow protocols. But by and large, sometimes we have to remind them, say, hey, you know, over your nose, please. And they just forget because they slip down, but they've been good.
Okay.
Yeah, same at my school. Students have been amazing with social distancing, and our school district, you know, did a great job kind of outlining the expectations, and students have been very good with following protocol, social distancing, wearing masks, and just following all the necessary steps to remain in school. So they've been great.
Okay.
And I want to add, if you don't mind, I just want to add that the reason that we went back to virtual was not because we were having COVID cases within our building or within our schools, but because in our county went into the red zone. And so that's when we pulled back. But we have not had any student contact traced back to school regarding COVID. It's all been to either family or community exposure. And we're a building of 1,600 students. So I think that's pretty awesome.
That is awesome. That's good to hear. Helps alleviate some of people's worries as they go back.
Right.
What are some things you thought would work but did not work? And do you find yourself more exhausted?
I think the second part of that question, do I find myself more exhausted, is an overwhelmingly yes. I find myself more exhausted in just seeing what the needs are and how I can best support. I have recognized that in this process, I have not had a break in a very long time, considering that most educators were still, you know, working and prep, you know, doing preparations in some capacity over the summer as well. So definitely do find myself more exhausted. I think one of the things that, again, hindsight is 2020, I think something that did not work so swimmingly well for many schools in Florida was simply having a cut date and all students were to return. It was kind of too much too soon, or just, you know, not with enough I think thought and intentionality put into it. So I have seen it go much more successfully at schools that had a staggered reentry and went beyond that too. So it wasn't just staggered reentry of, say, first and third graders are coming back on one date and then, you know, other grades coming back at a different time, but also how could that continue in the school? So looking at staggered arrival times and dismissals, looking at more staggered lunch and break times. So really looking at how that can work. And then the schools that I noticed that had more of a staggered approach were better able to handle situations and respond accordingly. So if it was that there was an outbreak of COVID at a particular grade level, it was much easier to kind of manage and contain things, communicate with who needed to be communicated with. So I think really, you know, things that didn't work so well often came from not enough conversations and preparation and planning with flexibility at the same time.
Okay, those are great lessons. Anybody else?
I would say that most things went okay for us. Nothing went beautifully or perfectly, but I feel like we kept trying so many different things. So if you say, were we exhausted? Yes, we continue to be exhausted because we keep saying, what else can we try? What new action can we take? We keep playing at things and trying different things out. And I think the fact that there's nothing that seems like the right answer, the perfect answer, and that we're still reaching and trying to find what works is part of the exhausting part. But things have really kind of normalized in our building in the last couple of months. So I feel like we're more settled than what we were earlier on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, related specifically to school counseling and the work that we do, something that I learned this year is that there's a very fine line between being a support to students and adding more to their plates, especially in a virtual setting. In the beginning of the year, we were sending out a lot of SEL lessons based on student need. And later we found that students were feeling overwhelmed. You know, they're struggling keeping up with schoolwork. So as school counselors, you know, we learned that maybe we shouldn't be adding more to their plates and having them watch lessons and do a pre and post test. So I think moving forward for me, that's been kind of the greatest lesson, not just me, but all school counselors in my district, because we offered so much. And then we realized, you know what, this is a lot for students. Right. And how do we provide services again without adding more? So it's just for me that's been the greatest lesson. And we did back off a little bit, at least with the online lessons the second semester. And we worked closer with teachers and having teachers provide some of the SEL work. And incorporate it within their curriculum. And that's been actually more effective. So it's just things that we've learned along the way.
I do feel like for a lot of us, it's kind of like being a first year school counselor educator all over again. As you remember, like, it just was so exhausting, you know, trying to get all that information and making sure you're doing what's best for students. And it's just a constant learning process, lifelong learning, especially during this pandemic. And when we're done with the pandemic, obviously it's lifelong learning, but it's more exhausting because we're dealing with lots of pivoting and changes. So what do you guys do to take care of your mental health?
That's an excellent question. As a very extreme extrovert, I found myself at the beginning of the pandemic thinking, how am I going to stay engaged? How am I going to get the energy to kind of keep me going? And so I signed up for a 200-hour yoga teacher training where I was with hundreds of other people who were like-minded and wanting to do the same thing. And so that was something that has been a year-long journey already here and has really served me well and kept me present in making sure that I'm nourishing myself, my mind, body, and soul. So that's something that was a much kind of larger undertaking, if you will, and has been very good for my mental health. And then there's also little things that I've done. Two things that stand out to me were I instituted every morning I would start the day with a cup of hot tea. And every evening before I went to bed, I would have a cup of hot tea. And a particular type of tea that I have has inspirational messages on it. So I let those kind of be my bookends for both the morning and the evening with whatever the inspirational message was. And then I've also given myself small challenges. So I challenged myself to do 7 days of 1 hour of meditation before bed. For those 7 days to prove to myself that I could do it and then be able to reflect upon the benefits of it. So I definitely have had to be much more intentional in my self-care. And I've also had to change the way that I operate about things. So whether it's in my personal or my professional life, I tend to be one of those that's like, okay, let me sit down for 5 hours and I'm going to try to accomplish everything I can. And now I find myself saying, okay, well, it might take me 6 hours now because I need to put some breaks in there. I need to step away from the computer or not be attached to electronic device of some sort. So even just the way in which I operate in personal and professional life, it has impacted where my mental health is at.
I love that. And it helps that you're near a beautiful beach, I'm sure.
That's right.
I love the beach. It helps relax me. How about you guys?
For me, I have a terrible work-life balance, so I've had to force myself. I mean, seriously, it's really bad. And I went to a workshop once talking about hobbies, and someone said, well, for some of us, school counseling is our hobby. And I thought, yeah, that's where I am right now, because I really do love what I do. And so my sometimes mental health is just researching something or learning about a new program. But I think this last year I have been on overload with that, so I've had to take a step back. And I think, what do I, at the beginning of the year, claiming a new word was my word was reclaim, because my intention is to reclaim some of my life balance as opposed to my work balance. So I've been working at that. Over the course of the last year or so, my husband and I have decided to try being whole food plant-based. And so I've been experimenting with cooking more, and I don't really like to cook. So that's been a good challenge for me to be more creative with that. And just, and then I am also an extreme extrovert, and I have, like, I'm at the point where I've done really well, but I can tell that I have reached my max, and I need people. I need to do things. And what my husband and I normally do is travel. That's, we don't go out to eat on a regular basis, because we'd rather eat out when we travel, and we haven't been able to do that. So spring break's coming up, and we're going to just take a simple road trip so that we see something different than the cornfields that don't exist actually yet. We don't have them yet. They're not grown yet, but just seeing something different. We need to go and explore safely.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's tiring cooking all the time.
Yeah. So for me, I just, more than ever, I try to stay physically active. I think just sitting in your office all day can be draining for anybody. Staring at a computer screen all day, you know, it's draining. So what I do is I ride my mountain bike a lot, gets me out in nature. And we're very fortunate to live somewhere where we have access to nature and mountains and trails. So my wife and I do that a lot. We try to get out. And somebody once told me, and it was a person with a very high position job. I asked them for advice, you know, how do you like kind of balance work life and everything? And they told me, you know what, Darwin, you got to try and focus on things that are important and try to worry a little less on things that seem urgent. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that. And this is about 4 years ago. And I still think about that every day, you know, and as educators and school counselors, when you look at your emails and you have, you know, 30 unread and everything, but you get home, you know, kind of making those choices, you know, is this really urgent or can it wait till tomorrow? And for me, having two little children, you know, I constantly remind myself, I got to sit down and read and play and do those things. And for me, like for my mental health, that's what helps the most, just kind of focusing on things that are important to me, family. And obviously my career and my students are important too, but just kind of balancing that. And that's helped me a lot, especially during this pandemic.
I love that. Especially right now, I feel like the emails have increased. Like it's just more and more and more students want to communicate via email and staff, which is good. I love the communication, but it's been quite overwhelming at times with all the emails.
Right. Darwin, I would say one thing that I learned a long time ago goes along with what you said, is learning to figure out what is the urgent, what is the important, and then what is the strategic. And that's what I try to focus my work on, right? And when I work with new counselors, I do that as well. But the important, and I should have mentioned, thank you for reminding me, Darwin, but just even having an opportunity to spend with grandchildren, because that's renewing and they're in my bubble. And I'm fortunate of that, but that's refreshing.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
I love what has been shared already about the urgent versus important. This is something I talk with my interns about all the time. I have 7 of them right now. And so they keep me very focused on what their needs are. And I think, you know, aside from just the knowing or identifying what is urgent versus what is important, is knowing that you are doing the best that you possibly can with the circumstances and with the information that you have, and being okay with that. You know, we all don't have the answers right now. There's no manual for this. There's no high five, we got this correct. And there, you know, that doesn't necessarily exist. And so being able to give yourself grace with being confident and comfortable with the decisions that you're making, with the information you have in the circumstances, and realizing that that's where everyone else is at as well. So I think, you know, giving yourself and others grace during this time is particularly important.
Especially extending grace to our students, because they are coming in, like we talked about earlier, being overwhelmed and coming back into large crowds and that anxiety, extending grace. Because one of the things I was going to mention about what we saw when students came back is we've seen them hiding some of our students hide, they skip classes, they're wearing the hoods up, and what are you going to do about that? Because that's what's been their comfort, right? And they're containing themselves. But I would say also something to just keep in mind is taking care of your teachers and your staff. I know we spend a lot of time thinking about our students, and we should, but what I found was that our staff just has been in great need of having that support as well. And when we came back at the beginning of the year, one of the things that our administration fortunately did hear loud and clear is that we wanted to address that, giving our teachers an opportunity to process some things. And as Sandra had said earlier about assessing, that's when we took a temperature of our staff and where they were, and have data to show that. And so that we actually knew which people were struggling, which people were ready to go, and then just giving them opportunities as the school year goes on to talk about what's going on with them, because there has been too much focus on assessment and academics, and we need to step back. And our teachers have tried to make that known, and I don't feel that's been heard enough. And I think we need to listen to our staff, because they're struggling just as much as our kids are.
Yeah, that's so true. I saw a tweet a few weeks ago. Someone said, who takes care of the school counselors? Mm-hmm. Who's counseling the counselors? And I thought about that. I'm like, it reminded me of the staff too. Like, we got to take care of our staff.
I think something I can add to everything that's been shared, and it's been so great to collaborate and hear all these great ideas and experiences. But I think just to remember that we're all in it together. We're not our own islands. And like Priscilla said, for counselors who haven't reopened yet, or their schools haven't reopened yet, it is going to feel like a new job, but that's not a bad thing. And I think it's important to write in our careers to feel challenged and to learn new things. For me personally, this year, I grew a lot with, being able to do my work virtually. And if we think about it, it seems like that's a direction education's going anyway, even when we're in person, holding meetings online, providing services virtually. And the face-to-face is so important, but I feel like, when people talk about things going back to normal, it's like, are they really going to go back to the way they used to be? And the answer is probably not. I think everything's going to be new. And in a way, it might even be for the better, right? So just kind of knowing that we're all in it together. We all learn every day, mistakes will be made. But you're really not gonna hurt your school community by trying things, but it's so important to use data, to be strategic, to collaborate, and to know that we're gonna get through this, and we are gonna come out stronger than ever.
Yeah. If I could add one other thing, thinking about next year, because if California is going into school now, that's one thing, but all those students who have been going to school virtually by choice and will finish the year out, if they come back to school in the fall, they need a plan for reentry as well and some kind of support. So we've had that virtual option for our students and families this year, but that option will not exist next year. So all of those students who have by choice been virtual will be coming back into our buildings. So we're already starting to talk about how we're going to support them and get them ready for reentry in the fall.
Oh, that's awesome. So what are some things that might be helpful for us as we're planning for that from your perspective?
Oh gosh, we're just in the talking stages, so I don't know if I have good answers, but we have to identify who those students are. And then we have to, what we've seen with the students who have reentered and who've struggled, we need to remember that so that when these online students return, that we approach them with the kid gloves and the grace that we had to extend to those students. That came back recently. So just being ready for that support, understanding that our office may be a revolving door at the beginning of the school year, different than it normally is with schedule changes and reconnecting with kids, just being ready. We have to be prepared emotionally for the drain that extra drain that will happen in the fall, connecting with those families, connecting with those students in advance, making as many personal connections as we can. Maybe even some home visits would be in order. And we're a small enough corporation that we can do that. I don't know if that's possible for a lot of school counselors out there, but I work with a team of three other school counselors and a social worker and a strong administrative team. So we would team up and start making some home visits just to connect.
Yeah, those are great ideas. At the end of our podcast, we like to do the Sunshine Spotlight. Can you name at least one thing that's made you happy recently?
Yes, I can share that actually involves the sunshine, of course. And that is that I have been able to be consistent this week with my beach yoga. And so we have had some sunshiny weather finally. And so that has brought sunshine. I'm also like a plant. I need my UV therapy and I'm just a better person when I have that. And then on the professional side, something that's made me happy this week is really being able to offer my experience and support other school counselors who are at various places of reentry. So for me, being able to connect with the school counselor community is something that's also, you know, a sunshine part of my week.
I love that.
Well, I was thinking about that this morning and something actually happened today that I'll talk about. I had yesterday at the end of the day, as we were dismissing students for buses, and I stepped outside my office, and my office is right in the hallway with students. So students have easy access to me. But there was a little sixth grade boy who came up to me and said, "Miss DM, I want to say thank you." And I was like, "Oh, what?" You know? And he said that he and a friend had been struggling and we had done some little conflict mediation with them. And he said he came over to my house last weekend and everything's doing great, you know. But it was just so sweet that he approached me to just say thank you and tell me what a difference I had made for him, because you don't often hear that. And it was just very genuine and very sweet. And I really loved that. And this morning I received an email I say a young man, but he just told me he's about to turn 50. But he was a young man that my husband and I, my husband is a pastor. And when my husband had his start in the ministry, we lived in Massachusetts and we met this young man. And he was probably about, 11, 12 years old. And he reconnected with us. He sent us an email this morning. It's the first time we've heard from him in 27 years. My husband officiated at his wedding, but it was just a very tender email about how we had supported him and helped him through his family's divorce and just different things throughout. And it was just unexpected and very heartwarming. And you know, we don't often hear the results of what we do. And when we do hear, it's very special. And that's so the email from him was very, very special.
Yeah, I love that when you hear the results of how you may have helped people you know it until it happens. How about you, Darwin?
Well, one thing that happened at work this week is that we analyzed our FAFSA submission results, and we were a little nervous this year because there's obviously added challenges to assisting students with that process, and we did get creative this year with doing a lot of it online and one-on-one appointments online and parent workshops and English and Spanish online. And we were pleasantly surprised to see that our numbers were very close to last year. And that was just something that makes me so happy every year to know that, you know, students are getting a Cal Grant financial aid and that college is a reality for a lot of students who feel that, you know, they wouldn't be able to afford it. And that, you know, it's just something that was definitely a highlight this week. And another thing that happened is a sunshine spotlight is I recently learned that our Chapman University is going to be reopening safely soon. And to know that, you know, I get to meet some of those students face to face and they're so excited to go back. So that was definitely a highlight too.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'd have to say for me this past week, we got recognized by former First Lady Michelle Obama, Reach Higher, and the National Post-Secondary Strategy Institute. There were 6 school districts recognized nationwide. 3 were in California. And the recognition was for helping students go on for more education or training and our financial aid efforts. So that was a huge surprise. And I'm very proud of all the school counselors in our district and obviously the other 6 districts that were recognized. It was called the Power of Hope Award. It was the first year Reach Higher's ever done this. So I'm very grateful for all of our school counselors and Michelle Obama, of course, for continuing the recognition of school counselors' work. Well, guys, at the end of our podcast, I just like you guys to say thank you to everyone out there listening.
thank you all for the important work that you do and stay committed, not just to students, but also to yourself and the profession.
Yes, thank you for all that you're doing and know that you do make a difference even when you don't have the awareness of the impact that you've had.
And same, thank you for all the work you're doing and all the work you're gonna do. And just remember, like we said earlier, we're all in it together. Mm-hmm. And the future is brighter.
All right, bye everyone. And thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you for tuning in to Reach Higher Riverside. You can follow us on Twitter at RH Riverside. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Reach Higher Riverside. You can also subscribe to our iTunes or Google Play Music and give us a rating. Thank you so much for listening in. We appreciate all of you tuning in. And as Michelle Obama would say, when they go low, we reach higher.